thank you for joining us. Today we are with Ike, a librarian at Mesa County Libraries. Hi, Ike.
Hi, how's it going?
A frequent guest on this podcast, so it's good to have you back.
Thanks.
We're also here with Emmy, a not-so-regular co-host, but also very regular co-host.
I'm
thank
like
you.
Three-quarters time at this point.
Three-quarters time. Makes the podcast happen, so thank you for coming.
Of course.
Today we're going to be talking about a pretty relevant topic, especially now with social media. We're going to be talking about information literacy and also digital literacy. So Ike, do you want to let us know what information literacy is?
Yeah, exactly. You know, we work at Mesa County Libraries, obviously. So I thought it was fitting to bring the definition of information literacy provided by the American Library Association. And that definition is as follows. Information literacy is a set of abilities requiring individuals to recognize when information is needed and have the ability to locate, evaluate, and effectively use the needed information.
And digital literacy kind of goes along with that. It encompasses information literacy in that it's the ability to use information and communication technologies to find, evaluate, create, and communicate information, which requires both cognitive and technical skills. That's also from the American Library Association. And basically what that means is just using technology appropriately and effectively. So making sure, which we'll get into later, that the information that you're putting on social media is appropriate and effective. Okay, so I guess we can start with the different types of information that there is. So there's information, there's also misinformation, disinformation, and malinformation. So to go through each of those to kind of give you a better idea, misinformation is unintentional mistakes. And I got this information from the Scientific American. So unintentional mistakes such as inaccurate captions, dates, statistics, or translations, or when satire is taken seriously. So when your family member reposts an Onion article and they're like, oh my gosh, can you believe this actually happened? That's a case of misinformation. Disinformation, on the other hand, is information that is fabricated or deliberately manipulated. So it's intentionally created conspiracy theories or rumors. And then malinformation is more of the harmful side. So it's deliberate publication of private information. So we see that often, especially in our society with social media. So I wanted to bring Ike in to talk about these different types of information, where they're prevalent, and how to protect yourself and also evaluate those different types of information. Mm-hmm. So Ike, would you like to get us started?
Yes. So, I mean, I can use an example that I think is relevant to this. I love to read. As I've gotten older, I like to read nonfiction more. And to me, nonfiction is a good illustration of how to use that information and how to or not to rely on that information. When I'm reading nonfiction, a lot of times it's books dealing with history or science or archaeology. I always look for those references because I want to know that the author or the writer has given me the sources or the backbone of what they're writing, and they're telling me, hey, I'm writing this. This is where I got it. I think that if someone is writing a book or an article or whatnot, and they don't provide those references, or if they don't provide them to me as the reader at a high enough level, I'm just going to totally shrug it off.
It kind of goes back to, for anybody that's taking a higher level writing course, such as a college writing course, or even sometimes in high school, they tell you to always cite your sources, mm-hmm. right? You can't just make unsubstantiated claims mm-hmm. without having something to back it up. So you want your books that you're reading, it's not a paper necessarily, but you want your books that are presenting information to work the same way. Mm-hmm. That way you know where the information is coming from.
Exactly. I think it's almost and granted, I've never written a book, but I think it's almost a disservice to the writer. And even if I was writing an article, it's a disservice to the writer and to the reader to just say, hey, here's this bold claim. I'm gonna say this, and I'm not gonna give you any citations, references, whatnot. It's a disservice to the writer, and it's also a disservice to the reader. It's like, hey, you guys should be gullible enough to assume that this mm-hmm. is correct without me actually presenting the facts.
You'll also see that type of information without citations on things like news articles or social media even. So I think it's important to also take the same, what you're using to evaluate books, and apply those to digital resources as well.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that, that frustrates me at times as a someone reading newspaper articles and whatnot, is the opinion editorial. Mm-hmm. Not to say that they don't have a place in today's society, but I look at a lot of those as going to be such a bold and, you know, big claims. Hey, this is so-and-so and this is whatnot. Where are they actually getting that information?
Yes.
Is this something they found in scientific research or through a survey, or is it just purely someone's opinion?
Yeah. And it's hard to look at opinions versus facts, right? Because that kind of goes into our confirmation bias, which according to the Britannica Encyclopedia is the tendency to process information by looking for or interpreting information that is consistent with one's existing beliefs. This biased approach to decision making is largely unintentional and often results in ignoring inconsistent information. So if you're reading an opinion article or a book and it's presenting you with information that you already agree with, it's then harder to evaluate to see if that's actually true or not, if that's factual. So I think that's a big part, is recognizing that we have this confirmation bias unintentionally and being able to go above that and look at the actual facts that are presented. So it requires a lot of your own research, which I think often dissuades people from doing the fact checking, is because you just assume that it's there, it's true, it was given to you by CNN or BBC, but you have to look at it to make sure that it's actually true. So do you have any tips for people?
So I mean, I can talk about evaluating sources. So if you're evaluating a source, so say you just read an article or something that was posted online, a news story, a book, I think it's good to evaluate sources, you know, because not all sources are going to be created equally. You want to ask yourself, a good first question is, who wrote it? I mean, if you're going to read, if you're going to be reading something, whether it's online or in print, you want to know right away and have it be clear who exactly wrote it.
Right. So and if The Onion wrote it, you can know from that it's probably not true.
Exactly. And I've seen stuff, as hard as it is to believe, I've seen stuff, mostly online, but I've seen stuff, it's like, who actually wrote this? You know, no name, not even an organization. Who put this out there? And to me, it's like, okay, if you're going to write something, you're doing a disservice to yourself and the reader if you're not going to say who you are.
And that makes you think, did they have an ulterior motive for posting this if they won't even give us their name?
If they don't want their name associated with something.
Show your face. Show your
behind your computer screen. Show your face.
The next thing that I always think is good to ask is this author an expert on the topic? If they are going to be making these broad proclamations and claims, do they actually have the credentials to be doing so? If it's me, a librarian writing about quantum physics, I don't really have the credentials to do that. I mean, I could write a blog about, oh, this is really cool about quantum physics, and I'm just a regular Joe off the street. That's a blog written by someone who's not a physicist.
Right.
When it comes down to it.
And I think that's a good distinction to make between what we're talking about, is that there are cases and it is appropriate to take information that you're given and interpret it and send it out. But there's a difference between that and using that information to make claims that could potentially be harmful to other people.
Exactly.
So it's okay to read about quantum physics, to read a book about quantum physics, and write a blog about how much you enjoyed that book. But it's not okay to take that book that you read and to make unsubstantiated claims that you can't back up with that and present that information like it's real and true.
Exactly. Like I could get on Facebook and say, hey, I just read this article about quantum physics. I think it's real interesting. But yeah, it's different to say like, you know, posting on Facebook and say like, hey, this is fact. You know, even if, especially if it's something that I twisted.
Right.
I also think it's important that credentials are provided and that those credentials are easily found, that they're not hidden at the bottom of an article or, you know, provided, but they have to be clicked on a bunch of links. It should be very clear what this person does and what their credentials are. Mm-hmm. Can anything be gathered about the author's background? Or is there a website for that author? Are they going to say, you know, are they going to give you information about them? Is this person trying to be out there and be open in public, or are they trying to hide behind the shadows?
Especially now when it's so easy to create a persona online, that you want to make sure that this is an actual person, right? They are who they say they are. It links back to their college professor website or something. It doesn't just take you to a Facebook link for this person that you can't substantiate if they're a real person or not.
And I mean, I think social media is a great thing. I mean, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Instagram. It's good to just keep that stuff in mind.
As with anything, there's going to be unintended consequences when something is created, especially when something like that has such a global scale. You know, they didn't, I don't think that was the purpose for creating Facebook. It was for people to connect with one another, but there's going to be unintended consequences. So it's good to make sure you have the skill set to evaluate. Even it doesn't have to be Facebook. It can be any social media website to evaluate the information that you're receiving on there.
For sure. I also think it's important to ask whether that individual who wrote the article or paper or whatnot, to ask whether they're supported or affiliated with any institutions or organizations.
Yes.
If so, if it says this person is writing this on behalf of so-and-so organization, do these organizations have any sort of agendas or purpose? And I mean, it's not always clear, but sometimes it's clear right away, at least to me, in my opinion, even if I don't know this much, a ton about this organization, just by their name, I can get a little bit of a clue as far as what they might be trying to promote or push.
Right. And that's what is called conflict of interest. So a lot of times, even for researchers who are producing these papers, these publications, they have to disclose at the end if there's any conflict of interest. If they're receiving money from the National Institute of Health to perform this, they have to disclose that because that could influence their point of view in this article. It shouldn't, but it could, and that's why they disclose it. So it's important to look for.
I was driving my car just a couple weeks ago, and I was listening to an interview on the radio. And there were a couple points made during the interview that I didn't exactly agree with. I didn't listen to the complete, I didn't listen until the end, but only when I got home later did I see something else online that talked about how this person was associated with a certain organization or what this person's job was. It's like, oh, okay, that makes a little bit more sense now.
Yeah, I'm going to nerd out for a second. So some listeners may know that I am obsessed with true crime. And I was listening to a podcast the other day and they were talking about how depending on what side you're on, so either the prosecution or the defense, the experts that you pay for either side are going to have an inherent bias for that side, right? So the prosecution may say, well, I think this evidence shows that this person is guilty, whereas the defense is going to say, I think it shows that it's not, and it's just because of the side that they're on. So goes back into taking information and evaluating it and knowing that the person behind it may have some ulterior motive, unintentional or not.
Well, and like depending on the topic, I'm sure you guys have seen that graphic where there's a number written on the ground and from one angle it looks like a six and one from one angle it looks like a nine. And depending on what side you're on, clear as day to you that that's what that represents, but 180 degrees around and that's not the case.
I think another important thing, sort of along the lines of what we were just talking about, was motivation and bias. And this does go back to, you know, is this person representing a different organization? I think it's important to consider potential reasons or intentions that might be associated with the writing of an article. Is it possible that the author produced the resource with the intent to persuade or reach out to a certain demographic, community, culture, or individuals who maintain a certain belief system? That's one of the things I, you know, I mentioned I love to read nonfiction. I also like to sort of nerd out and read scientific reports and papers that are on topics that I find to be especially interesting. And I, you know, sometimes it can be dry a little bit. I still get a lot out of it. that writing, most of that writing of that nature is so unbiased. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not going to say this is how it is, because in science, you're not always going to know that for sure. Science is a living and breathing and changing thing. They'll say this is thought to be, or this is potentially so-and-so.
Right. Or based on the evidence we gather. Mm-hmm. So in this specific situation, not generally.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
They're not going to say this is, unless they've come to some sort of scientific conclusion through testing that hypothesis, they're not going to say this is exactly this.
Right.
They're going to say this is possibly this. And I love that. I love that, that just acknowledging that this is science, we do not know 100%.
Yeah, and it changes constantly. Mm-hmm. By the time one paper comes out, with the time it takes for papers to actually be produced and published, that could be years.
Mm-hmm.
So by the time this study comes out, there could be another study already in the works that is disputing all of that information. So it's hard. It is hard to know whether something is true or not. But that's why hopefully the tips and tricks we're giving people will give them the best tools to evaluate information.
And that sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier as far as references and citing. Mm-hmm. You know, if I'm reading a book or an article and it says, it states something or it comments upon something, but then it's going to say, this is where I got it, or refer to this. It's like, oh, okay, if I'm interested in this, if I want to learn more, I can go back and read this other book or this other article.
Yeah, it's not going to be a fast thing, I think, is what we're learning, is that in order to appropriately evaluate these resources, there's not really anything out there that's going to immediately tell you that it's correct or not. Mm-hmm. You have to do some of your own research, which is not always fun when you're just scrolling through Facebook and you want to look at something right now.
Mm-hmm.
But in order to be, I think, a responsible citizen, you do have to take some of that onus on yourself and say, okay, I need to evaluate that, right? Before I repost it, before I send it to a friend or family member to see if it's actually true or not. Before I recommend this book to my friend, I should maybe make sure that the claims that it's making are true.
Exactly.
And I think what you're going with, Iker, is some really great tips and tricks. And there's an acronym that I was actually taught in one of my information sciences classes. And it's called the CRAP test. So C-R-A-P.
You heard it here first.
You heard it here first. And I got this information from the Clackamas Community College. And what their acronym stands for, or what the acronym that was created stands for, is C, is it current? R, is it reliable? A, so who is the authority author? And P, what is the purpose or point of view? So that's really what you have walked us through, is it reliable in that, is there a works cited list or a reference list? No. Okay. So that's something to think about when you're looking at it. C, when was the item created? So if it was written 10 years ago, it might not necessarily be as true now, because as we talked about, science changes, information changes once you gather more information. A, so who's the author of the authority? So who is it? What are their credentials?
Mm-hmm.
Do they have credentials? Can you find any information on them? And P, is the information biased? So based on who the author is the information biased? And so that's, I really like using that acronym just because it's fun to say also, but because it's easy to remember. And those are good baselines to follow when you're looking at information. And it is really helpful just for everyday life when you're looking at stuff. I actually have an example. I used it when my friend, who is an educator and who knows that I have family in the education business, she sent me an article that said Governor Polis is going to make all students retake the previous school year. And I looked at it and I was like, huh, okay, so it says CNN at the top. Okay, that's sort of a reputable news information, depending on who you talk to. And it's got a date of the current date. Okay, so maybe. So then I went to Google and I searched for Governor Polis executive order schools and nothing came up. And I was like, interesting. So then I went to CNN directly and tried looking through and I couldn't find anything. So I texted her back and I said, I don't know where you found this article, but based on what I found, it's not true. And she's like, oh, it's April Fool's Day. Like, you are the worst at April Fool's jokes. And I was like, well, you can't send that kind of information to me and not expect me to look at it. I mean, but that just shows you how easy somebody literally photoshopped CNN onto that and wrote the title that they wanted and changed the date so that it said what they wanted. And if I had a, if I just took that at face value, I could have very easily been sending that to my mom, who's a teacher, or to some of my friends who work in schools, and then they would have been freaking out. So it was disinformation on the person's part who created it, but then it becomes misinformation on my part when I'm sending that to people. I'm unintentionally sending them things that I think are true. So it's just so weird to go back and look at some articles that you're reading and reevaluate them and see, oh, well, I totally thought this was true. But now that I'm looking at it again, this person doesn't have any credentials in medicine, but they're telling me that this treatment will cure me. Well, how do they know? They don't have any credentials there. It was also written 5 years ago when maybe that was true, but now it's been proven not to be. There's a lot that you can go into with this topic.
Yeah, I think it's so important, you know, like you mentioned a couple of minutes ago, that information changes.
Yeah.
And I try to think about, like, my life in general from a, like, a personal standpoint, just with, you know, the pandemic, how much my knowledge and information has changed during the last 5 months.
Yeah.
And when I think about it, it's like, well, that's like even life before the pandemic, life, you know, things change, your knowledge changes, information changes all the time.
And I think that goes back to confirmation bias and that you have to be willing to look outside of what you inherently believe, right? If you're on one side of the spectrum or the other, you have to look at the other side. And that is so hard. And I am definitely guilty of, you know, on Facebook, I only follow certain groups that I believe that their information that they're presenting is true. But you have to look outside of that. And you also have to be willing to say what I thought or what I said is proven to be wrong. And there's nothing wrong with that. I actually appreciate people more who come to me and say, hey, remember that thing that I said? Well, you know, I did some more thinking and I did some more research and it actually turns out that it wasn't true. I'm like, that is awesome. Thank you so much. So that's something that I see now is it's hard for people to take a step back and say, yeah, I was wrong. It's like, okay, that's great. Let's move on. That's all it takes.
Yeah.
And it really does start with looking and evaluating resources and information to see where you got fooled so that maybe you know in the future, right? And it's hard, especially now, and I'm going to throw out a polarizing term that people are going to immediately have a reaction to, and that's fake news. That's become more of a topic now just in the past with our current presidential system is fake news. And I think that's on a lot of people's radars, but we're misinterpreting what is fake news, right? Based on the sources. So you've really got to go through these steps, which I would be happy to provide on our write-up so that people can actually look through them. There's also some great fact-checking websites for people who maybe don't want to spend, you know, 20 minutes looking to see if this article is true. So both of these are nonpartisan. So they shouldn't. I say shouldn't because I don't actually know, but they shouldn't have any bias either way. But Snopes, that one is one of my favorites. They're really good at urban legends. So those conspiracy theories that are started, they're really good at looking at those. And factcheck.org. They're also a nonpartisan. So you can usually find on there any of the recent topics to see. And they'll go through the same criteria that we did to determine if an article is true or if a Facebook post is true or something of that source. Another thing that is hard to do is when you're looking at a news article is when we were talking about this a little bit before, Ike, is when they are presenting a study. Right. You said that they can be dry and they can be boring. People don't always want to read or know how to read an article. But I think it's also important that you as a consumer of information are being responsible in that you understand that maybe the people that are writing the article also don't know how to interpret the results of the article. So For instance, I often think of a study where, let's say that somebody is given this medicine, right, and it does really well for them, and somebody is given a placebo and it does just the same, but they're saying, oh, look, the medicine works. It cured their disease. They did so much better. Well, so did the placebo. So thinking that it was going to treat you, then thereby treated you. But maybe the news is going to say, well, look, this worked so well. It treated this person. Mm-hmm. But they forget to tell you that the non-treatment just did the same thing. Mm-hmm. So you've got to be able to parse out that academic information also, which isn't hard. There's resources like the library and the librarians that can help you look through that sort of information. We do have access to Academic Search Complete, mm-hmm. where you can look up these articles for the most part to see and read them yourself, or Google Scholar often has those articles as well. It's just important to think about when you're reading, especially with medical information. I feel like that's really hard for people who aren't in the field to take that information and disseminate it back out to people.
And that's why, you know, I mentioned earlier that like some of that writing can be really dry. Yeah. But I think the thing is it's not necessarily, I mean, I might be reading it because I'm sort of already interested as an outsider in that topic, but it isn't necessarily written for me. It's written for other scientists. You know, if I can read a little bit of it and gain some knowledge, then I'm fine with that.
Yeah. They are very dry. As somebody who has to read many articles of those for school, that it is hard reading, but it's important.
Definitely.
And I think for people who, let's say, maybe don't want to read this whole article, right? They don't want to read 25 pages of a study that was done on trees to see what the conclusion was. The abstract is often a great place to look and is often free because it breaks each section down for you into a little piece and then gives you their conclusion at the end. Mm-hmm. If you want to know how they reached that conclusion or what steps they took, you do have to read the study. What else, Ike?
So, you know, we've already talked about some of this, but I just want to go into it a little bit further. It's just substantiation and dependability of that evidence. Is the author providing evidence to back up those claims or statements? As a general rule, the more evidence they can provide, that's going to make it more accurate or more believable. If they're going to give you one, you know, fact, like on so-and-so, June 10th, whatever, 2020, this happened. That's one little piece of information. If they can give you that times 20, then that's even much better. Yeah. And it's showing you that they did the work.
Yeah.
And they did the work to show the reader, hey, this is where I got this.
I think that may get a little difficult, especially when you're dealing with unknowns. Let's use right now for an example. Starting at the beginning, maybe the entities that were in charge of helping us through the pandemic didn't have the best information to start with. But as time goes on, they're correcting themselves based on information they've gathered. Mm-hmm. So maybe something that's new, that's unknown, that's going to be hard to really get that length of time, get those resources in there. So you've got to watch it as time goes on.
I agree, especially with something like, you know, COVID-19, because I first heard about it in January. And it's like this completely new thing. And I mean, as far as I know, there's so much of it that we're still learning about.
Yeah.
Everyday life. It's like, should I feel safe going to the grocery store or not? It's just changed so much over time.
Yeah. And even going through, at first they were telling you to clean your groceries as much as possible after you got them. But then as time goes on, they did more studies. They looked and they said, you know, it doesn't actually live on plastic that long in order for it to make a difference for you to clean your items. So it's really hard to look at information, especially when something so scary as what we're going through right now is going on, and really see if that is true or if I need to change my thinking based on what they're saying now.
Definitely. I also think it's good to cite where that evidence was obtained. And that goes back to, you know, the list of references. To say, okay, this was based on a study from 1975, just based on the date still might be relevant because maybe there was a really great study back in 1975, but it should also say where it came from, who wrote it. Yeah. I think that's important.
Yes.
How is the resource presented? Is it open and out front, or is it hidden behind a bunch of links? Different ways that a source might be listed or as a list of references cited, endnotes or footnotes, or you may even see something. I've seen this in some of those scientific reports, is personal communication, 1996, and then the name of that person. Mm-hmm. You may not know that person, but at least that person said, hey, based on, you know, this writing, my writing, I spoke with this person, or I emailed with this person over the phone, and this is how I got this. So then you can go back and determine, okay, even if I can't find a ton of information about that other person, at least they put their name out there.
And a lot of times they'll also include the interview that they did, a transcript of that interview, so that the reader can then go back for themselves and read the whole thing, because maybe they're missing some context clues, which is helpful.
Also along those same lines, I think it's important if the writer of the article or the report is mentioning any research that they've done, I think it's important that they go back and say, okay, how was this research conducted? What was the sample size, if that's applicable? How long did the study take? Things like that to see, okay, is this actually, did they do the work? If they're going to state something and then they say, based on my research, what did that research look like? Was the article peer reviewed? I think that's a big thing. What is the quality of the writing? I think if you're going to write an article or a report or a book, if you want it to be accepted and acknowledged, or at least at the very minimum make a contribution to a field, it should be well written.
Yeah.
and I'm by no means a perfect writer. You know, I make tons of typos. But if I'm going to put something out there in, say, like a blog, I want to make sure that it looks okay.
Yeah. That it doesn't have misspellings and grammatical errors. That can definitely be a clue in to who wrote it.
And that I was definitely appreciative both in undergrad and in grad school that my parents around, and my dad and my mom would both, they would read through those before I, you know, turn them in and say, hey, this is a mistake or whatnot. You need to fix this. I was so appreciative of that.
Yeah. And now we have the Microsoft spelling and error check, which is.
There's Grammarly that you can get for free. You can get the paid version for even the heightened thing. But going back to having somebody else take a look at what you've written, is also can be a bias check. I can't tell you how many times I'm designing something like a poster, and then I'll turn to my coworker and say, hey, what do you think about this? And he is far enough away from it that he can point something out, like library is spelled wrong, which has happened. but just like, hey, did you ever think about this thing? And then that can actually make the end product much better, because you have someone who's not so nose to the wall, you know, taking a look at it and refreshing it, gives you a chance to step back and kind of clear your head a little bit. But there's so many ways that collaboration and having somebody else look at something before you submit it for final review can improve the quality of that distribution later on.
And that's the basis of the peer review process, right? You have multiple people in that field looking at that to check for bias, to check for grammatical errors, to check for reporting errors, to see if something maybe is not right or needs to be looked at again or evaluated again to see if that finding is actually true or not. So it's just collaboration on a bigger scale in the scientific world. And that's why they're so reliable, is because you're having multiple people look at them. There are instances where information in there that's not true is going to get through, and that's just the nature of it. But for the most part, yes, very reliable.
Yeah, and I think it's important too. We talked about like timeliness. I've seen, you know, and obviously with certain topics, you want the most up-to-date news, but I've seen, you know, other scientific writing where they're referring to something back to, say, 1932. But the person in 1932 did such a good job, or it was so land-breaking, that that's still reliable. And there's been nothing that's taken place since then that's disputed that.
Yeah, I think it's hard with those date ranges a lot of times. But if there is only so much information out there on the topic, you're going to take your best guess from what has been provided. A lot of, I did some studying in my other master's, a lot of which was how the information in psychology, because it's such a new field, now people are going back and redoing those studies, and they're finding that, no, that actually isn't true. The power pose, which I'm sure we've all heard of, where you stand like a superhero before you give a talk, mm-hmm. that's supposed to boost your levels. It's supposed to make you a good presenter. It's not true. It's just based on research that they've done. Again, that's not a real thing. So,
and I mean, it's interesting to see how that stuff changes, but you're also going to find things like the polio vaccine.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Or like, you know, the cure to scurvy.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, that was determined a long time ago. It still is applicable, but that's not always the case.
It's also based on the field, right? Medicine, mm-hmm. for the most part, it's going to be the same. Mm-hmm. The cure for polio is going to be the same going forward. So you also have to think about what field you're looking at. Psychology is a relatively new science. So a lot of what is published or has been published may not necessarily be true once they redo those studies. Mm-hmm. So yeah, science for the most part, yes, is going to be true throughout time. Psychology, sociology, maybe not. So you have to keep that in mind when thinking about that.
Mm-hmm. And I even think within science, I mean, I look at something like, admit that I'm a nerd on this kind of a topic, but like reading about archaeology. Mm-hmm. I mean, stuff that they wrote about with archaeology back in 1930. I mean, sure, some of that stuff could very well still be applicable, but there's been 90 years worth of research that's mm-hmm. still taking place. So some of it is still accurate. Some of it's changed in some cases dramatically.
And that goes back to the C in the CRAAP test. Is it current? As much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, if you're in some field that only has done 3 studies, the most recent being 1997, just to throw out a date, you're going to have to just go with that mm-hmm. and gather as much information you can to make a reasonable guess.
Especially in some topics where there might, if you're looking at books, I mean, there may not have been a lot of work on a certain topic mm-hmm. since 1975. And in that case, what do you do?
Yeah.
You know, either you go out and write the next groundbreaking book that's going to stick around for 40 years, or you rely on something that's older.
Yeah.
And I think with, you know, talking about references and, you know, citing things, you can, it's a fun adventure in a way, because you can keep going further and further back. You can mm-hmm. say, okay, this person cited this report. I can go back. What did this person cite? What did this person cite? I mean, you can literally go as far back as you want to, back to the origins.
It's a little bit of a less interesting, like, YouTube rabbit hole. Mm-hmm. Not as fun to just keep clicking through links mm-hmm. as you would through videos, but still as interesting, I would say.
Mm-hmm. I think that can... how do I speak to this point? you guys went to school for... You're in school
mm-hmm.
for information gathering and literacy, and for someone who went to school for graphic design for the psychology of visuals... there are some snakes in the grass out there who will take some truthful information and design it in a way that definitely perpetuates their beliefs. Mm-hmm. And they can then reshare that out there. I actually saw a video a couple months ago about this Indian man who wanted to create a graphic that he could send to his aunties and uncles, but he wanted to slip in something so that they would start to believe something he believed, mm-hmm. like purely as a psychological joke. And he's like, here's the format that you need to fit. And he's like, you throw something up here. And he made sure that the visuals, like graphically, colors, the types that he used, fit something that they were used to being receptive to and believed mm-hmm. as fact. And that's what I see mostly on the internet now, is especially on social media platforms. It's easy. It's digestible for someone to look at a graphic somebody made in Photoshop or Canva or what have you, and reshare that, even though it does have a citation of sorts mm-hmm. put in the footer. People aren't going to go and actually check that at that point.
Right.
They're taking it at face. They're judging a book by its cover. They're taking it at face value and thinking, oh, this is truth because everything visually lines up. We're so used to fast food when it comes to that delivery of information that people aren't going down the rabbit holes that those of us who were trained to go to school for that, I'm talking about you guys, the general population just doesn't want to do that. Yeah. We're kind of lazy in that sense, or the information highway, if you will, mm-hmm. delivers it so quickly to us that if we can watch a 10-minute YouTube video about it versus reading an article that maybe might take 20 minutes, they're going to go that route instead, and they're going to be misinformed.
Unfortunately, there's no DoorDash for information literacy.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, it's like working out. Like, a lot of the good stuff, you have to spend the time and do it the hard way. And it's mm-hmm. might be painful at some times. You have to go look up a word that you don't understand, or check 3 more citations at the end of it to make sure that that person, you know, isn't completely biased in their writings. It's a lot of work to stay informed. And I think for a lot of us mentally are capped right now that we don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. And that perpetuates the problem.
Yeah. And that's why people like Ike and I, Ike is a fully trained librarian. He's had his degree. I'm a baby librarian. That's why we're here, is to help people navigate the information highway, mm-hmm. to get the information that is to the best of our ability, most reliable. We are humans. We're going to make mistakes. But we're here to provide you with the information you're seeking. We don't have ulterior motives when we're giving you information.
And that's, I think, my favorite thing about the library. You can have people on staff who don't see eye to eye politically, but for the most part, we all believe in basic human rights.
Yeah.
And we are here to help you pursue whatever path you need of information to do whatever it is you need to do.
We're here to eliminate information barriers, exactly. not to be information mm-hmm. barriers, because mm-hmm. we want you to be responsible, informed citizens. And if you want to look up something, no, I may not agree with what you're looking up, but that's not my call to make. My call is to give you that information.
Right? Exactly. Well, and then to give you, like, you teach a man to fish, like, if you can give them the crap test,
yeah,
hopefully they will understand to do that on their own time when there isn't a librarian there showing them how to use certain parts of our catalog. Right. You know, the reason, well, not one of the reason, but we had a coworker who's also a librarian post on her Facebook page about she did a public service announcement about how social media in particular is really great for confirmation bias. Mm-hmm. It's good for checking in on family and friends and seeing how they're doing, but you can't quote unquote learn anything from a social media platform. And you have to be super cautious when you're just scrolling mindlessly at the end of the day mm-hmm. and then you reshare something. I was bamboozled by the standing up broom situation. And then the next day I was like, you idiot. Like, you just reposted that like it was nothing without doing your fact checking. And, you know, I owned up to it. But yeah, it was one of those things where you have to understand where you're at, what you're looking at, and what's the intent behind it.
Yeah. And it's really hard. I haven't been on Facebook for quite a while. I've found that it wasn't maybe the greatest place for my mental health, but I was getting to the point where I had certain people whose beliefs that I agreed with and certain news sites that I think, from my point of view, are responsible. And so I was only following those. And a lot of times there's information out there that I wasn't getting, and I wasn't getting the whole story. But that, a little bit of a tangent, that it kind of is hard for your mental health to see things all the time that are not in line with what you think, right? So there is a good balance of looking at other sources, but also still keeping your mental health in that you are looking at sources that maybe aren't inflammatory, but that you do believe in. Mm-hmm. You just have to fact check them. Mm-hmm. And that can also be a mental strain. So Facebook is a big beast in that there's a lot you have to go through in order to evaluate information. But I really appreciate what this person said in their post, and that, like, it's not... You shouldn't be going there to get your information.
Right. Well, somebody asked me where you get the news, and I very jokingly said Facebook. Oh, no. Like, of course that's not where I get my news, but that's where a lot of people rely on. It's the first thing they do when they get up in the morning is open the app and scroll. Something else I want to just touch on very briefly is the psychology of being isolated, mm-hmm. especially the last couple months. And I've read some articles just about staying motivated when you're working from home and the mental exhaustion that comes in to meeting virtually or not being able to read tone in emails, especially when you're being flooded with them. And because you couldn't have, and to even some extent now still can't have face-to-face conversations and interactions with like-minded individuals, not like-minded individuals, the things that we need to have in order to be a better society aren't happening right now. Mm-hmm. And so you're polarizing people even more when you're just reading text. You can't pick up on body language. You can't pick up on tone of voice. And then it's taking a lot more brain processing power to type your response versus have a conversation mm-hmm. with somebody. And that just further digs that wedge in between people. And yeah, you have to limit your amount of exposure on that in addition to saying, hey, like, let's have a phone call, or let's mm-hmm. FaceTime individually, because this thing that you talked about, I think we could have a further conversation so I could better understand where you're coming from. And hopefully at that point, you know, throw in the CRAP and say, well, have you thought about this or look at this thing? And in a gentle way, mm-hmm. not that it's going to, you know, cause any more division. Hopefully, that's the goal.
And people can have differing opinions.
Absolutely.
It's totally fine. I don't want everyone to think like me. I don't think I think the right things a lot of the time.
Well, and for sure, I don't have all the answers, but going back to the studies we were just talking about, new information is coming out every mm-hmm. day. We're going to be wrong most of the time. Mm-hmm. To err is human.
Yeah, right.
But you have to be open to that and willing to say, I was wrong, and have that grace. Hopefully the people you surround yourself with can give that grace and have it for themselves too. And we can better move on as a civilization.
Mm-hmm. It's important. It's continual. Life is learning.
Yeah.
That's basically it. You're going to learn stuff all the time. So you've got to make sure that you have the right tips. And I think Ike did a great job of presenting us with those tips, and
absolutely
would be a wonderful resource. Any of the librarians here or library staff would be a great resource to help find and evaluate that information for people.
Thank you. And I also think it's not, like I said earlier, I'm a regular user of social media. So it's not, I don't intend to bash social media at all, because it does have a place, especially during the pandemic. Mm-hmm. I mean, early on when everyone was working from home, it's like I was hardly seeing anyone.
Correct.
So I think in that, during that time and continuing now, it still plays an important role.
It's just understanding the role that it is meant to play. Yeah. It's not, in its purest form, is not meant to be a news source, mm-hmm. right? Any social media is not meant to be a news source. They're meant to be a connection between people. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's called social media. It's not called news media.
News media. So you just got to, if you're using it in the way that it was meant to be used, mm-hmm. then I totally agree. I sometimes miss Facebook, but then also times I go back on there, I'm like, oh, I did not miss Facebook. Mm-hmm. So it's a great thing for a lot of people, especially now.
Yeah. You know? And I think like, it's like so many things, it's like each person's different.
Yeah.
You know, one person finds to be super useful. Another person might say like, hey, that's ridiculous. Or that's the dumbest thing in the world. But each person's different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's life. Mm-hmm. Life is learning and each person is different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sums it up.
Yeah.
I think alongside with this, it might be good for us to have a blog post to go along with this podcast episode. Mm-hmm. So we can link to some of the references that we talked about and maybe some visuals so people can follow along. But otherwise, I think this is a great conversation to be having, especially right now, because things are going to continue to slope one way or the other when things keep getting reshared. So it's good to be able to check your facts.
Yep. And I'd say above all, just as much as you can, make sure that you're being a responsible consumer and disseminator of information. If you have any doubts about the information that you're reading, before sharing it with someone, a friend, a family member on social media, just do a little check-in. Mm. Just like maybe 5 minutes, just to see if it's true. And, you know, if it is, then please. But if you have any doubts, I just always am so analytical about any posts I see. That's why I'm terrible at April Fool's jokes, because I check the internet.
You didn't even check the date.
For the actual executive order. So, just be a responsible consumer and disseminator of information. That's it.
Yeah, I know that Mesa County Libraries has staff and resources to help you along that journey.
Yeah.
We have so many databases and kind staff who will put aside our biases to help you figure out the truth in your search.
The truth insofar as whatever the truth is.
Correct. Yes. When I say truth, the
most reliable information.
There we go.
That we have. And be open to learning and be open to being wrong, because it's bound to happen.
Right. The only constant is change, right?
Yep. Exactly. Especially now.
For sure. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Ike. I really appreciated you coming along.
Yeah.
And Emmy.
Thank you. Yeah, of course.
Sorry, I took over the conversation a little bit. Yeah. This is a topic that I'm really interested in, especially with my background in psychology. I just like so interested in knowing why information is the way it is and how it's sent out to people. So thank you for coming on.
Thanks.
Look forward to a blog post, everyone, on this topic, and it'll give you some good resources and some good graphics, and talk to you later.